Now we're recording, yay. All right, GarageBand, you're happening. Moving on. This material should be something that you already, should be knowledge you already have. My whole point is taking this knowledge you already have and putting it into the context of being a nurse in the hospitals. So hopefully nothing is new. I just kind of want to change the venue a little bit. So as you know, you're pretty nervous about bugs in the hospital, aren't you? Are you? Are you nervous? I was in the hospital yesterday, and in general, I didn't even want to put my purse on the chair. I came in with all these bags, and I'm like, right? Yeah. I mean, we carry around a lot of germs. The hospitals are full of them. But do we have to be particularly germophobic? Or people are just, no. You're going to take adequate precautions. You're going to wash your uniforms when you go home, right? Okay? You're going to be careful. You're going to wash your hands. It doesn't mean you can't touch your patient with your hand without a glove. Please do that. Please do touch them. All right? Unless you have all sorts of open wounds on your own hands that would allow bacteria to enter. And if that goes, I'd just be real careful and really wash and wear a lot of gloves. Including your rose bushes and your hands are all cut up or something. Okay? Our bodies have some nice defenses against bacterial and viral and fungal invasions, right? Okay. But these will commit in. And what are antigens? What are antigens? You have that nice handout I gave you, right? This is antigens, this is antibodies. So what's our definition of an antigen? Right. Any foreign substance that can invade a body. We often think of bacteria and viruses, right? They're summed up. You know that that's an antigen. But think about a foreign particle. A splinter is also an antigen. So I want you to kind of broaden your scope. Fungi, toxins, chemicals, right? They're all antigens that are harmful to the body. We fight them off. Our body has wonderful mechanisms. The skin, of course, bone marrow, lymphoid tissue, spleen, thymus, all have to do with fighting off the invasion of any antigens in your body. You've learned all about that, I hope. And you also remember that the immune response, what's the first step in the immune response is recognition of the antigen, right? Remember this, hopefully, from some bio classes, some patho classes, right? Yeah, okay. Next, we proliferate, right? Okay. The antigen's growing, isn't it, in the body. So if you get, I just love that commercial about it, about the mucus, you know, and the bacteria that's in the mucus and getting all cozy. I mean, think about that. That's exactly what happens. The bug gets in your body, takes up residence wherever, in your respiratory tract, in a wound. Ladies get vaginal yeast infections all the time, anywhere. All right, so that antigen comes into your body, takes up residence, and multiplies, proliferates, right? Grows. So now the fight is on. Who's going to win? Are the bacteria or the virus, they're the ones that tend to spread, are they going to multiply faster than your body can fight them or your patient's body? So that's what we're looking at. Because now it's the fight, okay? So your body responds, doesn't it? And then, hopefully, there's some effect. Hopefully, it does overtake the antigen. If it doesn't, what happens? Let's say someone is immunosuppressed. And what happens? They get sicker. They have less resistance, and they're overcome, right? You all have many antigens in your body right today, right now, that may make somebody else sick. You're strong, you're healthy. Hopefully you're not looking like Patrick, the music major, who, you know, is nocturnal, staying up all night playing gigs, not eating well. We had a whole conversation about, what are you eating? You look awesome. And he's been sick twice since the semester started. I mean, like week 3. Obviously, already, he's immunosuppressed, right? Here he is with his asthma attack this morning. Okay, he's also stressed out because I'm lying. What about all that reading I have to do for philosophy? Okay? Yeah. So he is immunosuppressed right now. Right? So he was throwing up yesterday, and I know it was because he had a little food poisoning that probably you or I would have not even been symptomatic. All right? But because he also had a respiratory virus week before, he's immunosuppressed. He gets a little food poisoning, and he's sick. Now he's all stressed. He gets asthma, right? I mean, that's how it goes. If you don't have the defenses, most of us have very good defenses. Please take care of yourselves and encourage your patients so that you are strong to fight any. So this is the immune response. Hopefully the effector stage is when you have a successful response and the antibodies are effective. Some immunities, right? Did you learn about these? Can anybody give me some definitions? I have two major categories, natural or acquired. All right? And then these are different names for natural, different names for acquired. So what's a natural immunity? Yeah.
Is that when your body recognizes that there is something foreign in your kind of gap, so when it comes again, you can attack faster? So like the 2 or 3 days
long? No, you're thinking of something else. You're on the right, yeah, but that's not exactly what the difference between natural and, yes?
Is it when you're born and you have
something? That's what I'm looking for, yeah. Which is that? Which one? Is it natural or acquired? That's natural. The body has done no work, right? Acquired, the body has done some work to get it. It's adapted to it. Okay, the body has done work to acquire that immunity. When it's natural, it's passive. Your body has done no work, but you got it from your mom. Okay, you got it from your mom, so your body hasn't worked to do it. Acquired is when your body works. There are some immunodeficiencies. Okay, we talked a little bit about that a minute ago. There are people that are relatively healthy that become immunosuppressed because of a disease state. Because of the poor lifestyle choices, right? Because of overwork. But there are also those who are born with immune systems that are not functioning correctly, right? A deficient immune system, and this can be genetic. It can certainly be situational, as with all of us at some times, but also know that people can be born with a deficient immune system, simply not have a good response. So we're going to look how we diagnose this. We're going to look for children who have 6 to 12 infections a year and adults that are 2 to 4. Now these infections aren't just your normal virus, your normal flu bug that's floating around everybody gets. These are like weird infections that no one's getting, that are just very strange, out of the blue, that normally exist in our society. Nobody gets them, but these people who are heavily immunosuppressed. Okay. And physicians who are disease doctors have a whole list of them. Diseases that we normally don't see. So we talked a little bit about congenital and genetic before in a different context. Now let's bring it into immunosuppression or immunodeficiencies. So there's congenital immunodeficiencies, and that's what I said, when you're born with it, right? It's congenital. It's always genetic. It's a genetic dysfunction. There's something genetically wrong. These people will not get better from the immunodeficiency. They may get better at controlling the diseases that come to them by taking more antibiotics and prophylactic antibiotics and medications. We can treat the disease that they get, but the basic reason they're getting them is because they are genetically immunosuppressed. They don't have the strength to fight. Right? So that's congenital. And then there's acquired immunosuppression that is Patrick, okay? You guys at times. It can be nutritional. It can be iatrogenic. What? Can you think of an example of acquired immunodeficiency that would be iatrogenic. Yeah, tell, move on with that. Maybe tell you. Corticosteroids are not a treatment for diabetes. So I think you're mixing up some things.
And like tacos or something, like, I can't remember exactly.
I think you got it. Yeah.
If someone's like already diabetic, they're going to have to put on that or something like that.
It
just like.
Yeah, actually, you're right. Yeah, that's a good scenario. Someone who is diabetes, who is on corticosteroids, excuse me, treatment for something else, they're going to have even more trouble. That's correct. Yes, corticosteroids do decrease your resistance. Absolutely. That's a good example. Anybody else have another example? Yeah. Oh, that's an excellent example. Organ transplant patients, we suppress the immune system. Yeah, so they won't reject the organ. Perfect example of iatrogenic. Anybody else? There's one big one that you might remember. Giving blood, no?
Mm-hmm.
Should help you, actually. Unless there's a reaction. Then yes. Yes, ma'am. Perfect. Chemotherapy. That's a great example. Because what are we trying to do with chemotherapy? Stop very active cellular growth, don't we? So in doing so, we also kill off some good cells. And people are very, very at risk for infection. Generally during cancer treatment. Okay? So that's acquired. Trauma. Excuse me, someone mentioned blood. Yeah, absolutely. If you're bleeding out, what's happening? If you've lost a lot of blood, so they don't have the ability to move everything around in your body like you need to, right? So you're not going to get those antibodies to the antigens to fight them. Right? Trauma, AIDS, yeah. That's what AIDS is in me and those suppressed function and stress, which we're all experiencing, but you're going to take good care of yourselves so it won't become a problem, right? So what do you do as nurses? You're going to take a health history, assess patients' diseases and disorders, any autoimmune disorders, that's important too, neoplastic diseases, cancers. What about medications, blood transfusions, just like someone said? Other lifestyle, physical exam. How is their skin? How are their mucous membranes? Are they a coke addict that's destroyed their mucous membranes? It's going to make them more susceptible to respiratory problems. Right? Mm-hmm. Chronic illness. Yeah. Your body's constantly fighting. This is what happens. That's why so many people, on their death certificate, it says pneumonia. Because pneumonia finally kills them after they've been fighting something else. So very often it's hospital-acquired pneumonia that ends up being the cause of death. When in reality they've been fighting maybe a cardiovascular disease for years. Okay? But they're so immunosuppressed they finally get pneumonia and they do die of pneumonia. Okay? Which is a complication of many different things. We always assess the lymph nodes. Remember the lymph nodes, right? And that chain of beads all over the body. Okay. And what happens to lymph nodes during a time of when there's antigens in the body? What's the physio behind that? They become hard, swollen, yeah. What's the physiology behind that? What's going on to make them present hard, swollen? They're getting full, and if you notice, it's the lymph node closest to the source of infection that get full, because they're the staging area, right? The staging area of what? What's there? What's in the lymph nodes? Lymph, right. Very good. Lymph is in the lymph nodes, correct? So if you have a sore throat and you're getting some kind of a strep throat or something, it's going to be these lymph nodes, right? You know, you all know these. You go to the doctor, you're a kid, strep throat, your nose goes like this, right? You can feel them on your body. They're right there. If they get big, that's because you're fighting some kind of an infection right there. Sometimes if your throat just feels a little scratchy, you may say, am I getting sick? And then, I'm okay. You can always tell if your body's responding. It's kind of nice to know where you are normally, you know, because you can see, my body's telling me there is something going on. I better take it easy. I'm not good at that party, or not stay up studying until 3. Or yes, take my friend up on their offer of a nice dinner. Okay? It's important. High protein is really important for healing, so make sure you're eating well. Unlike the example that I showed you this morning in my son. I don't know what he's eating, but whatever, it's not efficient. Okay, we had this discussion a couple days ago. We're changing our system at home. Hopefully it'll be better. Okay, chronic illness, special problem with lymph nodes, right? So the lymph nodes get hard, correct? Because of the lymph flowing in them. Good. What's that lymph carrying? Waste? Yes, good. It's from? From the infection. Keep thinking. Yes. Oh, you don't want to think anymore. I know. Think a little more. Yes. Yes. White blood. And what specifically in those white blood cells? What's fighting the antigens? What are we exactly? What's a more general term? What are we making to combat the antibodies? Antibodies. We're making antibodies, right? To fight the antigens. Okay. So the whole race is how fast can the antibodies mass to fight the antigens? And can they mass in numbers large enough to overcome the quickly developing number of antigens? Right? So that's very simple. That's all it does. If your body's healthy and the antigen is not too strong, you're going to be able to do it. If the antigen is very strong, sometimes no matter how healthy you are, you're going to get that awful flu that's going around. Correct? Conversely, if you have very little ability to produce antibodies, you're immunosuppressed, okay? The tiniest little antigen coming into your body is going to be able to proliferate and it's going to make you sick. So we're all walking around with many potential illnesses in it right now as we exist. They're subclinical infections. Yeah. There are bacteria that live, or viruses that live in us that do just fine, okay, until we get sick. Right? Until we're immune suppressed, then they think, great. Right. And this may be a new bug coming into us. This may be one that hangs around all the time. As you know, our skin, every orifice in our body, our mouths particularly, are filled with bugs. The human bite is far worse than most animals in the number of bacteria that we carry in our saliva. Blech. Right? You don't want to be bit by a human. Very bad. No. Okay. So these antigens that live in our bodies, sometimes when we are immunosuppressed, those natural, well-balanced bugs that live inside us can take advantage, can't they? Right? So it doesn't necessarily have to be a new infection. It can be something that's very happily balanced until you're immunosuppressed, and then something that lives in you. That's called an opportunistic infection. Okay? So an opportunistic infection is one where a bug that normally exists very happily within a body has the ability to now proliferate to the extent that it becomes pathogenic. All right? Now, the other time opportunistic infections occur is when we're giving antibodies. No, we're giving antibiotics. Okay, when we're giving antibiotics to your patients, or antivirals or antifungals. Because what we're doing when we give an antibiotic, yes, we're fighting one specific kind or several specific kinds of bacteria, And in doing so, we are destroying the natural levels of equality that have existed within a body. We upset the balance. All right. So now we allow bacteria that has been nice and balanced. We have a little of this, and then everybody's happy. But if we kill off this one, then some of these other ones, great, I get this area. And now they're sick. All right. So kind of once people get sick and they start getting a series of antibiotics, they often get more and more infection. And sometimes that is opportunistic infection. Because we're killing off some, allowing others that exist within the body to come up. But there's something else you need to be careful of in your your patients. So we did lots of evaluations to see how healthy the systems are. If someone is immunosuppressed, okay? All examples. Hypersensitivity tests. Those are allergy tests. Anybody have those ever? Yeah, tell us about those. Can you tell us? How does that work? Yeah. If you're hypersensitive, hence the word hypersensitivity. So your body is then over-responding, isn't it? Yeah, it's over-responding. That's what we do when we have an allergic reaction. There's something in our body that causes us to be hypersensitive. Okay, so we have an allergic reaction. Yes?
Can they be wrong with those? Because once I had one, like one of the arm ones,
people change. Your body, how long was it when you had the...
No, this was done like a year ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I've had my dogs for like 10 years. So, I don't know. And then when they got the results, they're like, oh, you're allergic to dogs.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Obviously, they were wrong. Right? Obviously. At least for your dogs.
Maybe my dog is
good. I have a hyperallergenic dog. Maybe you have a, do you have a poodle?
No.
Do you have a soft-coated Wheaton Terrier?
Yeah, really. One is like a
smelling
greyhound. Like, it's just really short hair.
Yeah. Really hairy dog. Right. And usually it's more than the hair. It's like the skin and the saliva and everything else that we tend to be allergic to. Maybe they're just very clean and wonderful. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So, obviously, with HIV, you're going to learn a lot about HIV in MedSearch 2. But there are specific tests for HIV. There are also specific tests for viral loads, how much virus is in your body. You know that there are tests. You don't need to know about the specific tests, just that they exist. So what's our role as nurses in this whole thing? We make assessments, okay? If your patient is immunosuppressed, I hope you recognize it. Talk to them about it, see what you can do. Teach them, support them. We obviously provide supportive care. The idea of fluids, all right, and rest is all very real. Okay, for your patients. If they're in, most anybody in the hospital, a surgical patient's going to be immunosuppressed, right? Just because of the stress that their body has endured in surgery. So you're going to limit their visitors. Let's say you have a patient that is working on his laptop, he's got meetings in his hospital room, he's got his family, you're going to go, you know, this is not good. You need to spend some time to rest. You need to, and that is under the nurse's control. We say to that kind of patient, you're not going to, it's my job to provide you with a healing atmosphere. I don't really see that going on here, and I'm concerned about your health. Are there some things you can modify? Right? Because you're not going to get better, you're not going to have a speedy recovery with this kind of stress going on. So that's where we step in and we support them. What can we do? Can we limit your phone calls and cut everybody off after 6 o'clock so you can get a good night's sleep? I see that you're really agitated. Maybe we can get an order for some kind of medication so that you can sleep. I know your roommate's really noisy. Can we help with that? Okay, these are the kind of things we facilitate so that the patient gets what they need. And that's not necessarily medication. It can be organizing of people or pushing fluids, okay? So we talked a little bit about a chronic and acute diseases, but inflammation can also be a chronic and acute. So an acute inflammation comes on quickly, right? Lasts a couple of days, and it's gone. You've all had an upper respiratory infection, a little virus, last couple of days is gone, right? Yeah, that's it. Okay, the inflammation is a response, comes, goes. Chronic inflammation. What would be an example of chronic inflammation? Yeah, rheumatoid arthritis, yeah, chronic. Chronic allergies, all right? I'm still congested, I will be probably all semester because we have these lovely trees here. Okay, that's an inflammatory response that's going to continue. Right. Where's acute? Comes, goes. The splitter comes out, it heals. Okay. Versus chronic. There's lots of chronic inflammation that goes on. Inflammation, all right, these are my Greek guys. There are five different characteristics of inflammation. So an infection will generally lead to inflammation. That's part of our body's response, an inflammatory response. Okay. So if someone, easiest to talk about it in the skin because we can see it. So if someone has cellulitis, for instance, you're all going to see cellulitis this semester. It's common. It's when the cells are invaded in the skin by some kind of bacteria. Usually bacteria, could be a virus, could be a fungus, all right? And the skin turns really red, has petechiae, which are little red dots. People commonly get it on their lower limbs. And so what do we see? You can actually touch that leg and you feel the warmth. You can do that too. If you have a cut and it's all red, you touch it. The skin actually feels a little warmer. I want you to work on developing your ability to feel as nurses. Right? I want you to be able to sense and feel. I don't want you to necessarily rely on the instruments. I want you to be able to walk. So if you see someone with a fever, touch them, please. Get a sense of what does a fever feel like compared to what is normal. If you start developing that, infection is going to be followed by inflammation. If it's in the skin, somewhere where you can touch, you're going to feel some heat, aren't you? You're going to see redness, correct? You're going to see swelling, aren't you? Oh, my Greek guys. There's going to be some pain, right? And there could very well be a loss of function. Okay? So when your patient is going home with a surgical wound and you're going to tell them to watch for any kind of infection in that wound, you're going to teach them to watch for signs of inflammation. Because the body's response to an infection is going to be an inflammatory response. So you're going to teach them to watch for signs of infection by teaching them to watch for signs of inflammation, which are heat, redness, swelling, pain, and then loss of function. Okay? Right? So here are your signs. Redness, swelling, heat, and pain. And if you want to know the Greek, is it Greek or Roman? It's Greek. Greek. Words, there you go. So you can impress any medical students you run into. But we don't need it for this class. Okay, so infection causes inflammation. So your body responds to the infection by becoming inflamed, injury, foreign bodies. Right. So there are three ways we can, three outcomes, potential outcomes to this inflammation. We're going to eliminate the stimulus. So we're going to pull out the splinter. You're going to take me away from all the blooming plants around here. Okay. Maybe you're going to stop the disease state. You're going to get rid of that bacteria that's in that wound that's causing that infection. Then, in that case, you're going to stop the inflammatory response, right? Got it? If you get rid of the bacteria, the body has nothing to respond to. The antigen is now gone. It won't be sending antibodies, which are causing the inflammatory response. See the way that works? Okay, you have an antigen invasion, right, causes an infection. The body produces antibodies to the antigen. The response is inflammatory. Right? That's how we fight. Okay? And we're going to create heat and all those things. So we can pull out the splinter, stop this, the exposure to the stuff sticking with the dogs, you know, whatever. Okay? If you are allergic, with appears or not. We can arrest the disease. We can stop, bring down the levels of virus or bacteria. Or very often, these diseases just progress and end. You get a cold, it's going to be 3 days, you know you're going to be 3 days of bad, and it's going to be, you know, a couple days come, a couple days gone, but you know it's just going to run its course. What happens here is the virus invades, it lives, and it dies off. Okay? Most people can fight it, and it's fine. So you're either just going to get rid of the stimulus, you're going to stop it, or you're just going to let it continue its normal pace and die off. For those of you who are a little more, have a good background in microbiome, you might want to look at this a little in-depth dynamics regarding the outcomes of inflammation. Not to worry. Not something for everybody. Okay, so what happens when the body's defenses are not appropriate? Okay? This is hypersensitivity, like allergies. When the immune system does harm by exaggerating the response. We had a lovely example walking in here today with my son. What was it? What was going on? Many things. Physically wrong. But anything wrong with him? No, he's a great guy. I'm very proud of him. But he came in here, what was he complaining of? The guy said, he texted Mom, I've taken 2 puffs on my inhaler, I still can't breathe. He's having an asthma reaction. It's a very allergic day. I'm feeling it too. He's also stressed. Okay, so he's a great example of a hypersensitivity reaction. His body is overreacting to the antigen of the, for us, for him, for many of us, of the allergen in the air, right? So what's it doing? It's affecting his bronchial tubes and overreacting, closing them up so he can't breathe. So now what's the problem? The pollen? Not particularly. His problem is the fact that he's overreacting to it, isn't it? Because the majority of you are sitting here breathing just fine, right? Yeah. So it's a hypersensitivity response. And when you go to an allergen just and has a skin test like you were describing, that's what you're looking for. Does your body hyper respond to an antigen? If so, it's often called an allergy, right? It's generally what we call it. You have an allergy, you hyper-respond. Let me explain. I have a nice story that Patrick was a good example. But I have another story about a patient. This was in the Midwest, and he got bit by fire ants. Do we even have fire ants here? I don't know. I've never heard of a fire ant. Anyway, we do? We do, okay. He came in. He was a construction worker. He got bit by a fire ant, and he couldn't breathe, so his buddies brought him in. And so they just brought him right to the ER. Then he was on the med-surg floor, and we were treating corticosteroids and taking away all the inflammation so that he could breathe, right? So he comes in, and he's like, yeah, you know, this happened to me about 6 months ago. You know, I got bit by a fire ant, but I didn't have this problem. I could still breathe. You know, I just kind of got congested, and I said, and now this time you couldn't breathe? He said, no, I couldn't breathe at all. I would have died. And I go, you know, you never should get near a fire ant again. In fact, you should, like, change your profession, because what's going to happen to him if he gets bit by a fire ant again? Yeah, probably anaphylactic shock. Well, that's what we've experienced now, but it's going to happen even faster, right? And why is there this progression? Why is it, a little, you know, tolerable the first time, kind of scary the second time, and probably die the third time? Why? His body now has recognized the antigen. Okay? Once the body sees it, it's built up antibodies in the body already. The first time, he has a few antibodies built up. Okay? He builds up a little more the second time. If he gets it again, those antibodies are there and ready and are going to hyper-attack so quickly that he probably won't make it to the hospital to stop his own body from basically killing him because of its reaction, because of his hypersensitivity to the fire ants. Got it? Understand how that goes? Okay. Because he's hypersensitive, and that's why they do the skin test. So a little scratch, if you get red, well, you have the antibodies to some extent. Maybe a little bit, maybe a lot. That was an extreme example. Patrick and his asthma is a subtle example. All right? But it can get really bad. The other thing about hypersensitivity is autoimmune diseases. And does anyone have any experience with those? Know anything about autoimmune diseases?
Yeah. My mom has celiac.
Great, tell us about it. Now that sounds like a reaction to the gluten.
Yeah.
So that's a hypersensitivity reaction.
Oh.
That's a little different than autoimmune. Okay, yeah. Is that in celiac disease?
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. So it is considered, I actually thought it was considered autoimmune, but then when you were saying that with the, I kind of, great. I'm sure you know more about it than me.
Yeah, but, right now.
Okay, tell us more. Yeah, because it causes that reaction.
Causes autoimmune.
Let's talk about a more pure autoimmune, so we don't get confused. Can we talk about a more pure autoimmune disease? Basically, the body's allergic to itself. Okay, there's some forms of arthritis, and then the body reacts. Crohn's is a nice example. Crohn's disease is a nice example of an autoimmune. Mm-hmm. There's no antigen involvement. It's just a hypersensitivity response to something within the body. Okay, that's autoimmune disease. So we did allergies, hypersensitivities. We got the idea of what a hypersensitivity is. We understand allergies. Very good. So inappropriate responses are mediated by the allergen. This guy with the fire ants was extremely sensitive to fire ants. He probably had no problem with acacia trees that are around here. Many of us are allergic to. So the allergen itself, some things are very allergic. Dust, right? A lot of us are allergic to dust, okay? Most of us are not allergic to shellfish. Some of us are, okay? Exposure, yeah. The more you're exposed, the more antibodies you build up, and generally the stronger the response is over time. Now, granted, our bodies change, and we can outgrow some allergens. Okay, we're no longer so allergic. When we change geographical areas, that changes too. Some people outgrow allergies. Yeah, your body just develops changes. You no longer have it. Some people get allergies. Again, more exposure. Latex. You probably will not have a problem the first time you start using, if you're allergic to latex. There's very little latex in the hospital anymore. But, for example, if you started using latex, you probably wouldn't be too much bothered this semester. It gets worse and worse and worse. Okay? And you discover you have a latex allergy. I'm not allergic to latex. I'm allergic to the powder that sometimes there are powdered gloves. So I was working at a GYN rotation where I was doing a lot of vaginal exams. And I was just fine the first couple of weeks. Because I was doing all these powdered, lots and lots of gloves, lots of powdered gloves, because they were easier to put on. I thought, great, these powdered gloves are wonderful, I love them. Well, then I started getting little petechiae all over my hands. I'm like, oh no, I'm allergic to latex. And they said, no, you're not, it's just a powder. So I switched to non-powder gloves, and I was fine. But it took like 2 or 3 weeks of the constant exposure, then my body builds up the antibodies, and then I started the petechiae. That's a very classic presentation. All right. So the amount of exposure, the more exposure you get. Genetic makeup. As you know, some of you are predisposed to allergies and you inherit the propensity for them, correct? Yeah. You have allergic parents?
No.
And they're not. So for you, it's not the genetic. Commonly it is. Not always. So you know that. I'm not at all surprised that Patrick came in today, because I'm feeling really congested. You can hear it in my voice. And I'm really congested. We respond completely differently, but we respond to the same things. So when he texted me about his asthma, I wasn't at all surprised. Yeah, that makes sense. And I can also say, yeah, it's allergies, because I'm experiencing it too. So there are different types of hypersensitivities. We're not going to get into differentiating between the types. I want you to be familiar that there are different types. When you see them in charts, you'll know. At that point, you can go and do the research on what's going on with your patient. Right? But just know that there are different types of hypersensitivity. It's a whole science unto itself. And you can read about that if you like, and how we attack them. Latex allergies, yeah, just something to be aware of. Healthcare workers have more latex allergies, and why would that be?
Exposure.
Yeah, I think you're listening. Yes, exposure. Yes, exactly. 1-3% of the general population. And exposure, remember, can be anything, even inhaled. All right, so if you have a patient with a latex allergy, just be really careful. Nothing going in there has latex in it. Because they can even just smell it. Right. Very good. So hopefully what we've done today is bring you concepts that you already knew into the hospital setting. Now we're going to stop this, and we'll have the recording. See, we have... Oh, you can't see. But we have...